From WBUR Boston, I'm Jennifer Westaway in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. At the Vatican today, first there came a wisp of white smoke from the chimney atop the Sistine Chapel. Then the bells of St. Peter's Basilica rang out. That's what you're hearing now. Moments later, Cardinal Medina Estevez of Chile appeared at the Vatican balcony and announced to the thousands of waiting faithful in St. Peter's Square and the world, we have a new pope.
Cardinale Ratzinger.
Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, picked today by the Vatican conclave to be the 265th Pope of the Catholic Church. The 78-year-old German cardinal, widely regarded as the Vatican's doctrinal watchdog and close advisor to his predecessor, John Paul II, stepped forward dressed in the ornate red and gold garments of the papacy and declared his promise to be, quote, a humble worker in God's vineyard.
I signori cardinali hanno eletto me. Un semplice, umile lavoratore nella vigna del Signore.
Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger takes the name of Pope Benedict XVI. He also takes the helm of a diverse, sometimes divided global church, 1.1 billion Catholics strong, at a critical moment in history. Ratzinger is the deeply conservative dean of the College of Cardinals, head of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, and a hardline Catholic intellectual who takes an uncompromising stance on social issues. Now, where John Paul II left off, Benedict XVI picks up. Tonight on Point, the 265th pontiff in the line of Peter, Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, now Pope Benedict XVI, and the future of the Catholic Church. We begin tonight with the latest from the Vatican. Michael Paulson is a correspondent for the Boston Globe and joins us live now from Rome. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Jennifer.
Well, this seemed to be a zippier conclave than usual, no?
It did indeed. It was a record pace, just four ballots over less than 24 hours.
What was the reaction in St. Peter's Square? Were you there?
I was there. I've been there through each of the chimney puffs over the last 2 days, and the crowd was jubilant. They were surprised. It came late afternoon here in Rome, and when the white smoke emerged, as had happened several times before, there was some ambiguity about exactly what people were seeing, and it took several minutes for the bells of St. Peter's to begin to peal, which was the confirmation that, in fact, a pope had been elected. And then there was more than a half hour before Cardinal Ratzinger emerged as the new pope, and people were chanting, "We want Papa," the Italian word for pope, and "Papa, Papa, Papa," as they eagerly anticipated seeing who the next pope would be.
Now, in that half hour or so between the actual appearance of the new pope, were people in Rome racing to the square to get there?
They were. You know, when the smoke first emerged, I would say there may have been 20 to 30,000 people in the square, but by the time the new pope emerged on the loggia of St. Peter's Basilica, there were hundreds of thousands of people. It was just the entire square was full everywhere you looked, all these people with flags from their nations, and the crowd was stretched down via Conciliazione, which is the main street that stretches out from St. Peter's.
Can they actually hear when they're that far back?
The Vatican is very technologically sophisticated. There are large screen TVs set up in various locations, and the Pope was well mic'd, so I think many people could hear.
Now, was this new Pope likely to have been a familiar face, a familiar name to people in the square?
You know, I would say he is the best known of the cardinals of the Church and the most controversial. But do average Catholics know him? I would say many do not.
Okay.
You know, there's one primary figure in the Catholic Church, and that's the Pope. But certainly to those who pay even moderately close attention to the goings-on of the Church, Cardinal Ratzinger has a reputation and has been a major figure in the administration of John Paul II and is well-known to those who follow such things.
I do remember reading that back in 1978, when the name of a Polish cardinal was announced, there was a bit of an awkward pause because it wasn't such a familiar name, but that would not have been the case today.
No, the other thing is that Cardinal Ratzinger has been extraordinarily visible here over the last couple of weeks. He was a very close friend of John Paul II, and a top advisor to him. And in his role as Dean of the College of Cardinals, he's played a leading role in overseeing the church, both the administration of the church since the death of the Pope, but also the mourning rituals. So he was the cardinal who delivered the homily at John Paul II's funeral. He delivered the homily at a mass on Monday that served as the kind of inaugural event for the conclave. He's been very visible and very prominent since the death of the Pope.
Michael, we talked last night about the pains for secrecy that were taken at this conclave, but now that it's over, do we know anything about how the decision was reached yet?
We don't know very much, but I expect that we will hear that in the coming hours and days. The cardinals spent tonight having dinner with the new pope, and he will be saying mass with them in the Sistine Chapel tomorrow morning. Thus far, they are mostly issuing comments of praise about the new pope and encouraging people, particularly those in the West who may be skeptical, to keep an open mind and to get to know the new pope in a new way.
Skeptical because of his reputation as being a hardliner on doctrine?
That's right. Cardinal Ratzinger was really the defender of orthodoxy in the John Paul II papacy for the last two-plus decades, and he led a crackdown on dissenting theologians. He issued a document that said that adoption by same-sex couples would do violence to children. He's taken a very hard line against what he described on Monday as a dictatorship of relativism in Western societies. And some of those statements have alienated folks on the left in the church.
Well, I was going to say, I wish you probably your first good night's sleep, but I'll bet, Michael, that you're not even going to get a full night's sleep tonight. Lots of reaction.
It's going to be a busy few days here as we try to piece together what happened. And on Sunday, there will be, although Cardinal Ratzinger is now the Pope, on Sunday, the formal inauguration ceremony will take place at St. Peter's Basilica.
Well, thank you for making time for us tonight.
Sure. Take care.
Michael Paulson is a correspondent for the Boston Globe. He spoke with us from Rome. We're talking tonight about Benedict XVI, the new pope of the Catholic Church, and you can join the conversation. Do you applaud the conclave's pick? Is Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger the right man, the best man to lead the Catholic Church now? And what message do you think the Vatican might be sending with the decision? The number to call is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now in the studio is Stephen Pope, Associate Professor of Moral Theology at Boston College. He is an authority on the papacy and the leadership structure of the Church. Welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Also with us from New York City is Margaret O'Brien Steinfels, co-director of the Fordham Center on Religion and Culture, former editor-in-chief of Commonweal magazine and editor of American Catholics in the Public Square. Welcome to you.
Hello.
I have the same question for both of you, and Stephen Pope, maybe I can start with you, and it's the most obvious one. How do you feel about the cardinal's choice?
It's a good question.
It looks like one you don't want to answer.
No, it's a complicated question because, you know, you really, as a Catholic, you want to start off on a positive note, and you want to give the benefit of the doubt, and there is a honeymoon period, and there certainly is a daunting job for a very intelligent man. I think is a distinctive difficulty from a point of view of American Catholicism because of what we've been through for the last couple of years, a little bit more than that because of the crisis of sexual abuse and the kind of needs that we have for accountability in the hierarchy and for a smooth relationship between the laity and the bishops and for a greater inclusion of women in the church. And this is not the man really who has made a mark in a positive direction in those three areas of concern. I do have to say he's highly intelligent. He's a very honest man, and I think we have to all respect his integrity as a person.
Mm-hmm.
He takes his faith with utter seriousness, and he lives according to what he believes. So we have to start off with the premise of respect. My major question is whether he really has the skills and the habits of mind that will help us right now with the church in 2005. And the main word I would use here as a challenge to him is the word dialogue. For all of his intelligence, it's a driving intelligence more than an inquiring intelligence.
Okay. I want to turn that question now over to Margaret O'Brien Steinfels. How do you feel about the pick of Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger?
Well, I admire Stephen Pope's calm, respect above all, remark. I have to say my first reaction when I walked into my office and someone said that to me was, oh no, not him. And I've been trying to recover from that kind of instinctual reaction all day. He is the Pope, and there is no doubt about that.
Why was your initial reaction so strong, Margaret?
Well, my initial reaction, I think, came from perhaps a hope still that among the cardinals there would be one who had some ability to loosen up the church a bit. Cardinal Ratzinger, everyone's talked about his hard line on doctrine, but among his other activities over the years has been a kind of squeezing out of collegiality in the church, not only the Synod of Bishops, but the National Bishops' Conferences, especially our own in Washington, has felt the sting of his criticism and his refusal, in a sense, to treat the bishops as a collegial body when they try to write letters, when they try to make policy.
It is much more of a top-down leadership. Stay with us there, Margaret. We're going to just take a pause and come right back. We're talking tonight about the new Pope of the Catholic Church, Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, now Pope Benedict XVI. Do you think the Vatican Conclave chose the right man? How do you feel about a pope who has been described as the intellectual clone of John Paul II? Is Benedict XVI the best choice to lead the global Catholic Church in the 21st century? Join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Jennifer Westaway, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. On Point. I'm Jennifer Westaway, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking tonight about Pope Benedict XVI, Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, and the path the Catholic Church will follow under the leadership of the new pontiff. You can join the conversation. Were you surprised by the pick? If John Paul II was a pope of the people, sort of a charismatic global star, what do you make of Cardinal Ratzinger? He has a more scholarly style. Join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined tonight in the studio by Stephen Pope, Associate Professor of Moral Theology at Boston College, and from New York by Margaret O'Brien Steinfels, co-director of the Fordham Center on Religion and Culture and editor of American Catholics in the Public Square. Joining us now from Secaucus, New Jersey, is Reverend Anthony Figueredo. He was personal assistant to Pope John Paul II from 1996 to 2001, and he is now associate professor of theology at Seton Hall University. Welcome, Reverend.
Thank you, Jennifer. How good to be with you on such a great day.
Well, I'm most interested to ask you about Cardinal Ratzinger personally, because as a member of the Vatican's inner circle under Pope John Paul II, you would, of course, have gotten to know Cardinal Ratzinger, I presume. What's he like?
I was so happy, Jennifer, that he himself described himself as a simple, humble man in whom he wants God to work and act. He is a simple man in every sense of the word. His apartment is about 7 minutes walk from his office, and every morning he would walk across the piazza. He wouldn't want a car. He would greet people. He would stop and talk to us on his way to his work. Every Thursday, Jennifer, he would have a mass at the German college, and he would invite whoever wished to come. He's obviously a man with who doesn't blow his own trumpet, but is very happy to blow the trumpet of the church when that is needed on issues which have become challenged and are truly in jeopardy, such as contraception, such as women's ordination. I think that's the man we're going to see, and I think this is a great, great day for the church and the world.
How comfortable do you think he might be with taking on the mantle of world traveler? Is he likely to be the same kind of globetrotter that John Paul II was?
Knowing him, very often he didn't want to be in the spotlight. He would often leave others to talk, and he had a great capacity to synthesize and then come back. So I do not believe we will see a pope who is going to travel as greatly as John Paul II. However, I think he's going to teach very firmly and faithfully from the Vatican. It would not surprise me if we see his first writing out very, very soon. Of course, he will be traveling to Cologne in August, and that will be great, as he's a chairman to the World Youth Day, and I myself will be there as well, and I'm looking forward to it immensely.
Stephen Pope, if I can turn to you now, is there any question that Pope Benedict XVI might actually be even more conservative than John Paul II was?
Well, that is the impression one can get from a few episodes. One concerns the attempt of John Paul II to really reach out to the Jewish community, to the Muslim community. He was the first pope, excuse me, as you know, to visit the synagogue in Rome, the first pope to visit a mosque. And normally observers will put that in counterposition to the document issued by the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, which Cardinal Ratzinger was directing, regarding Dominus Jesus, the Lord Jesus, and the role of Christ in salvation. And there were statements made in that document that seemed to run strongly against the tone of John Paul II's outreach. Some people regard this as a correction of the message that was implied in John Paul II. I'm not sure it was that striking of a contrast. Another episode that concerned some cardinals was the Pope's desire to meet with world leaders of different religions in Assisi for World Peace Day, which he did a number of times, and to gather them together to pray for peace in the world. And there was a concern that, on the part of some, I think a minority, that this would imply a relativism, that the faith and prayer of a Jew or the prayer of a Buddhist monk or the Dalai Lama was of equal significance to the prayer of the Pope. And I have no reason to think Cardinal Ratzinger would make that suggestion, but I think there was an attempt to correct an implication that some read into the world, the meeting of the world religious figures in Assisi. So is there a direct contradiction? No. Is it held by some people that there is an attempt to bring the Pope to correct implications of misunderstandings and so forth? Yes, I think so.
Margaret O'Brien Steinfels, I'd like to bring you back in. And on the question of personality, what difference you think it might make that Pope Benedict XVI maybe won't be quite the same global traveler or as outgoing and maybe won't have the same kind of personality to soften the edge of hard doctrine?
Well, of course, in my lifetime, I've seen several popes, and they have all had very different personalities. Mm. John the 23rd was the pope of my young adulthood, and I don't think I will soon forget him. And it is the case that although the popes all defend the same doctrines, their personalities, their characters, their degree of warmth, I would say, and their ability to meet and listen to people probably does have a very large effect on how they are perceived. And certainly, I think Stephen Pope is right. There is probably not a big difference between Cardinal Ratzinger and Pope, well, late Pope John Paul II, on these doctrinal matters. There's probably none at all, but it's certainly the case that John Paul II, as we saw in the days leading up to his death and the funeral, an outpouring of affection and esteem that one doesn't know, but it does not seem that Cardinal Ratzinger would even be comfortable with that kind of adulation.
Reverend Figueredo, if I can ask you, there are obviously some concerns, some fears that need calming, I suppose would be the way to put it, about the new pope. What do you think the approach will be of Pope Benedict XVI to try and ease some of those fears as he takes on this task?
Well, I think, Jennifer, the very fact that he's taken the name Benedict is very significant. Benedict the 15th, his predecessor in name, was a man who came after a period of doctrinal clamping down. And what happened was that Benedict the 15th really sought theological peace whilst being firmly convicted to the teachings of the church, and he managed to do that. I think what we are going to see in Pope Benedict XVI is a man who really believes that relativism is eating away at the faith. And we see that. We see that in the decline, for example, of vocations in Europe. We see that in the decline of vocations in North America. And we see it absolutely in moral norms, where everything is up for grabs. And one thing we will not see in this new pope is catering to the majority opinion in that sense. And I think the cardinal is on very good grounds in this sense.
Is that an approach, though, that's likely to draw new members to the Catholic Church?
I really believe so. I teach at a seminary, and what I have witnessed in these past years is that all of these men, increasing numbers, are very faithful to the Church's teachings. The quality is far superior than we've had for a long time. And the reason they have come, they want to follow a pope, John Paul II in this case, who was constant in his teachings, who didn't flinch in what he taught. Cardinal Ratzinger laid down the manifesto in his talk yesterday. He spoke of the dictatorship of relativism. And I think if people see that this man is firm in his convictions, we want to follow someone who's firm in their convictions. And certainly that would be the sort of man I would want to give my life to, and the Church I want to give my life to. It may not be popular. Jesus Christ wasn't popular. He ended up on a cross for what he preached. And I think it becomes very dangerous when we simply try to attract people by watering down the teachings of Jesus Christ.
What about the question that Stephen Pope raised about the ability to foster interfaith dialogue and Pope Benedict XVI maybe not being as adept at that task as John Paul II was? Would you agree with that?
I actually wouldn't. I think what dialogue means, I mean, just the etymology of the word dialogos, is it literally means through the word. And for a Christian, for a Catholic, that word is Jesus Christ. So when we speak of interreligious dialogue, we're certainly not talking about dialogue on the level of the subject in the dialogue. We're talking on an objective teaching. And that teaching isn't a matter of finding the lowest common denominator in order to promote interreligious dialogue. It's really being faithful to the teachings of Jesus Christ and really enabling other people to accept what we believe in. Otherwise, why would we want to belong to the Roman Catholic Church if everything is up for grabs? So I really believe that what we're going to see with Pope Benedict XVI is a man who attracts others, who really is able to enter into dialogue on firm convictions, and that's going to be a very good thing for the Church and the world in a moment of moral flux.
I'd like to go to the phones in a moment, but Stephen Pope, you have a comment you'd like to make.
Well, I think that the issue of dialogue is very important for the Church today. The word dialogue, I think, has to be based, or intending to, first of all, reach mutual understanding. And that has to be based on trust. And when we approach the issue of faith with the primary motive of trying to convert someone to our faith, to make a Muslim a Christian, that is a non-starter for dialogue. So there has to be a way in which a person can be true to Christian faith and at the same time engage in a sympathetic understanding so that we can come to mutual understanding together without an attempt to convert, to persuade, to coerce someone to accept our point of view. This is a problem all over the world, and strong statements like Dominus Iesus can increase hostility against Christians by a variety of different points of view, including the Muslims.
Let's take a line, a caller here on our line. Keith is calling from Boston, Massachusetts. Hello, Keith.
Good evening.
You have a comment or question for our guests?
I do. It's rather brief. As a Protestant mainstream Bible teacher, I have a casual interest in the papacy and its movements. I noticed that the age of the most recent pontiff seems to suggest maybe inadvertently that they're almost putting in a traditional hold or an interim or just trying to buy time with a little bit of a stall, not expecting a long papacy rule but sort of an interim blank time. Just my gut reaction.
Okay, Margaret O'Brien Steinfels, I'd like to bring you back here. 78 years old, and just turned 78, actually. That's the age of Pope Benedict XVI. Do you think that signifies somehow a kind of a caretaker pope, a transitional pope? He's a little older.
He is a little older. It's hard to say, of course, and we don't wish that this is a short papacy and that he would die.
Oh, goodness, I hope no one thought I meant that.
No, since we don't know what the nature of the discussion was among the cardinals, it strikes me that the choice was to continue the policies of the previous papacy and perhaps to wait on something else, however many years. But, of course, we all know 77-year-olds can live another 10 or 20 years, so I would suppose there's no guarantee that this is just a short or transitional papacy.
Stephen Pope, how do you think the fact that they have chosen a cardinal from Europe as opposed to the developing world is going to be viewed by the growing number of Catholics in places like Latin America and Africa?
Well, 2 points. Quick, in response to the caller, I don't think this is a decision for a blank or a placeholder or an interim that is not dynamic. I think the cardinals believe they're on a roll because of the great outpouring of love and affection for John Paul II at mm-hmm. the funeral. And the international attention it's received has been stunning. I don't know of any world figure that's received this much attention. The second point, the task of this pope is self-appointed, is secularization, is atheism, is relativism.
There's a lot of isms
and
that
there's
he's
a lot
not,
of isms.
Yeah,
yeah,
not
and,
a fan of.
But it's all rolled into a complex that says that every view is equal to every other view. And there's nothing really to particularly get upset about or worked up about, and we have to have the primary virtue of tolerance. I think the position Cardinal Ratzinger has taken is it starts in Europe with modernization and will from there spread around the world. So if that's the problem, if secularization is the biggest problem we face as a globe, then you have to go to the heart of it, the belly of the beast, and begin from there, and then evangelization will work its way out and provide an alternative to the secularism that's part of modernity.
Reverend Figueredo, does that sound to you like the thinking of the Cardinal Ratzinger that you knew?
I really believe so. Cardinal Ratzinger, I worked with him at a number of the intercontinental synods, and certainly he would believe that at the root of our difficulties that we are facing in the Church, let's be clear about that, is faith. Is faith. The faith has become relativistic. And in that sense, as early as yesterday, he said that what we need to face a Christianity with it, which is lethargic and which is tired, is an adult faith. One thing that's very interesting is we're talking about this new pope being very conservative and traditional. In fact, in his book, The Salt of the Earth, he speaks about the new movements. The new communities, such as Opus Dei, the Neo-Catechumenal Way, Communion and Liberation, which are very innovative in their approach to the liturgy, which are very innovative in their approach to evangelization, truly innovative. And he says we need to promote them wholeheartedly. So I think we're going to see a pope who is traditional in doctrine, but is very, very open to change in meeting the needs and challenges of the world we face today. He's not afraid to speak the truth, and that will produce some tension. But tension isn't always a bad thing. Once the Church stops being a church which produces good tension, then it becomes irrelevant in the world.
How do you feel about that, Stephen Pope, that the actual introduction of tension by this choice might be something that the Church needs?
Well, it's done it. If that's the purpose, here we go. We're on a ride. I think it's. I think we would have had tension whoever had been elected pope, and I think whoever had been elected pope would be solidly Orthodox, not rigidly, but solidly concerned with the faith and passing it on. Two issues come to mind. One is the geography of the decision to locate the nexus of the problem in Europe. Still leaves the experiences of many people who are Catholic, I'd say most people who are Catholic, out of the purview of the Vatican. Of course, there's internationalization of the Curia, and there's a local church, and the church is growing in the Southern Hemisphere. Nevertheless, it's still a European, Eurocentric perspective. The second point is that the Cardinal Ratzinger approaches the problem as an intellectual problem, as in a problem of faith as well, of the will. There's also an issue, though, of being a person who can draw people into conversation, who can show respect for people, who can give them a sense that their opinions matter, their views matter, and that you do that by listening, not primarily by talking. And I would like to know if Cardinal Ratzinger, now Pope Benedict XVI, has the capacity for listening that this church needs so badly.
Okay, we're going to just break now for a brief period. I'd like to thank Reverend Anthony Figueredo for joining us this evening.
Thank you so much.
Assistant Professor of Theology at Seton Hall University, and Reverend Figueredo was Special Assistant to John Paul II from 1996 to 2001. We're talking tonight about the new Pope of the Catholic Church, Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, now Pope Benedict XVI. You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Jennifer Westaway in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for On
Point. This is On Point. I'm Jennifer Westaway in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking tonight about Pope Benedict XVI, the 265th pontiff of the Catholic Church, and you can join the conversation. What are you hoping for from the new pope? Will his papacy be a dramatic change from the style and reach of John Paul II, or a continuation of his doctrine and teachings? Did the Catholic Church miss an opportunity, do you think, by not picking a pope from the Southern Hemisphere? Or is the Vatican right to name a more traditional European pope? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined tonight in the studio by Stephen Pope, Associate Professor of Moral Theology at Boston College, and from New York by Margaret O'Brien Steinfels, co-director of the Fordham Center on Religion and Culture and editor of American Catholics in the Public Square. And with us now from Steubenville, Ohio, is Scott Hahn, professor of theology and scripture at Franciscan University of Steubenville. He wrote the foreword to two books, one, Many Religions, One Covenant, and the second, The Meaning of Christian Brotherhood. They were both by Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger. Welcome.
Good evening, Jennifer.
Scott Hahn, I'd like to start with you here. In particular, I'm wondering whether you think that the Cardinal, now Pope Benedict XVI, whether his books give us any indication about what kind of a pope he'll be.
Well, I think they certainly give us some indication, because he is a theologian first and foremost, and one who is respected even by people who disagree with him. His mastery of St. Augustine and his treatment of St. Bonaventure's theology of history, as well as his writings on theology and culture, and most especially eschatology, you know, the study of the last things. He has distinguished himself through the decades as a very profound thinker who can write very clearly. I've used at least 10 of his books as texts in undergraduate and graduate courses. And pretty uniformly, students come back and say how surprised they are to find someone who can think so deeply and yet write so clearly. So certainly that is going to be a feature that we find in the papacy of Pope Benedict XVI. But being pope means a whole lot more than theologizing profoundly and clearly. I think he is going to pick up where Pope John Paul II left off as a teacher, a preacher, using the Wednesday audiences and other means, too, to make sure that he fulfills his own role as successor to the Apostle Peter by carrying on this kind of apostolic function of teaching and preaching.
Were you surprised that the cardinals made such a scholarly choice?
Well, you know, if it had just been done in isolation, it would have been a shock for everybody. But because of his elevation in the early 80s to his position as cardinal prefect of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, you know, I think his role for the last two decades in the Vatican has been a symbol of partnership with his predecessor, and a real sense of solidarity as well. The two of them have very different temperaments, and they have different philosophies in some sense, and yet they come to the sacred deposit of the faith with that same childlike set of convictions that this is the greatest gift we've been given, and it is our responsibility, you know, not to redefine the faith, but to appropriate it personally as much as we can, and to pass it on effectively as much as we can.
I'd like to go back to the phones now and take another caller. We have Marina calling from Clayton, North Carolina. Marina, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Do you have a comment or question for our guest?
Yes, I had a comment. I am a Catholic from Latin America, and I welcome the new Pope, Benedict XVI. I think the cardinals follow their feelings and their souls when they try to search for the next pope. and he's going to be to us like father, and like most loving fathers, he's going to be strict just because he loves us, and he's going to expect from us to get into a higher standard of responsibility and things that are part of the doctrine of the Catholic Church. So, but he does that because he loves us and wants us to be better people.
Would you have liked to have seen a pope named from Latin America, being from there yourself?
Yes, I did, but when I started reading about the backgrounds of the most possible candidates, I realized that this is not a matter of geographical representation. It is a matter of finding the answer from God as to who will better communicate to the masses what God expects from us. So it is not like any other election of presidents and things like that. It had to be more with someone that is in deep communication with God and that understands what will keep the Catholic Church and the Catholics true to their beliefs and to what we need to be better people.
Okay, Margaret O'Brien Steinfels, what do you think that the new pope has to do to assuage some critics, to calm some fears?
Well, I think Stephen Pope raised the critical point. Does he know how to listen to people? I think there is no question that a pope would insist upon the truths of Catholic doctrine and defend them. On the other hand, there is a way in which one talks about these things. There is a way in which one tries to persuade and convince other people of some of these truths, not just people around the world, but even the Catholic faithful. And I think that one would find it very hard to make persuasive and convincing arguments if you really were not listening to what people were saying and what they found absent in various doctrinal statements. We earlier heard that there is unlikely to be any change in the Church's teaching on contraception. But as far as I'm concerned, and I think many Catholics are concerned, the teaching on contraception has never been received by the Church. It has been taught by the popes. It's been insisted upon by John Paul II. But it's not just that Catholics, in opinion polls, oppose contraception. It is, in fact, in their daily lives, they understand that they simply have to be prudent and careful about the number of children they bring into the world, because it is a very difficult and complicated task to raise children. Certainly some people are capable of raising many children, but most are not. And I simply think that there is a lot that the hierarchy of the Church, especially the Vatican, might learn, not only from listening to lay people on the subject, but listening to their own fellow bishops from places like Africa and the United States, of course, and Europe. This is simply not a teaching that I regard as having been received by the Church, and therefore I think it behooves the Vatican to continue discussions on it.
Stephen Pope, you're scribbling away there. Was there a point you wanted to make?
No, I'm just learning so much from Peggy, as usual. I think there's a question of evangelization, and that is a big word for me. Just that means trying to bring people closer to God, mm-hmm. and bringing people closer to the heart of faith. And it's one thing to evangelize by insisting on doctrines and making sure theologians aren't telling people that what's not Catholic faith is Catholic faith. That's one thing. But there's also evangelization through social justice and through the witness to human rights and to be through peacemaking. That was, I think, John Paul II's genius, that he could show his concern for justice and for the marginalized. And I really hope that Cardinal Ratzinger, now Benedict XVI, can continue that tradition. And the continuity is very strong with John Paul II. And actually, my question...
Hi, this is Margaret Steinfels. I'm going to have to cut out of here.
Oh, okay. Well, we thank you, Margaret, for joining us. We really appreciated your contribution this evening.
Can I just ask a quick question of Scott?
Whether he
thinks that... this is genuinely a question. I keep reverting to Cardinal Ratzinger. Do you think the writings of Benedict XVI, when he was Cardinal Ratzinger, show a strong concern for social justice and human rights that was along the same lines of what we've seen so powerfully done in John Paul II.
Scott Hahn, did you hear that?
Yes, I did, and I thank you for the question, Stephen. Let me back up just a step or two and say I really think that what Margaret was saying is a point to be taken very seriously, that so much of what the Church has been teaching in general, but on contraception in particular, really does need to be clarified and deepened and received. And I think Stephen is right, too, in emphasizing that the role of evangelization certainly includes, you know, introducing people to the good news that we find in the gift of Christ in the Holy Eucharist and the sacraments, and in so much of what we experience in the communion of the faithful on Sundays. But our faith goes beyond that. It has to express itself in terms of social justice. And I remember as a Presbyterian pastor being schooled in a right-wing or libertarian economics in the 70s, discovering the social encyclicals of the Catholic popes of the 20th century, and the social teaching of the Catholic Church is often characterized as the best-kept secret. It is so profound and so applicable to a wide range of issues, and not only in our society, but in the Third World. And I would say John Paul II is without peers in that area. And that when you look at the writings of Cardinal Ratzinger, not surprisingly, he brings to bear much more of his experience as a German. And so his concerns are, I think, Eurocentric in a very real and important way. But I think he's going to grow, and he's going to be stretched a lot as the spiritual father to 1.2 billion Catholics by listening and hearing them. I've met him on four occasions, and all four times I've come away with a sense that he is one of the finest listeners I have ever met.
Well, it's a skill he's definitely going to have to employ in the coming years. I wanted to get another caller in here, Scott Hahn. We have Bill is calling from La Crosse, Wisconsin. Bill, do you have a question or a comment to make?
Well, a comment. Well, it could be rephrased into a question, but I'm Protestant, I'm gay, and I think this is going to be a disaster from my point of view. Certainly it's going to be, from the gay perspective, much worse than Pope John Paul. And I don't see any improvement. I see increased strain between the Vatican and the American Church, whether it's Protestant or gay, I mean, or Catholic. And I see more getting stuck back and hunkered down in the bunkers, and maybe getting back into a little bit more Middle Ages thought. And
what is it, Bill, that concerns you more about the new Pope Benedict XVI than about John Paul II? You said you're even more worried by the new Pope than you were by the last.
Because it's going to be more conservative even than John Paul was. I think it's pretty obvious. And it spells, I think, more strain for the dialogue for women in the church, certainly for gays. So as far as the church is concerned, I think gays they're just going to be out of the picture now for a while. It's going to be a disaster for the gay relationships. And, you know, I think it's just going to be hunkering down in the bunkers and digging in their heels. That's the way I think or perceive it.
Stephen Pope, what kind of a challenge does this pose for the American wing of the church? I mean, out of step with the Vatican on a lot of issues, we should say.
You keep asking me impossible questions to answer.
But those are the fun ones.
Yeah, not for me. I think there's no American wing, I would say, first, but I know what you mean. You mean the church as it exists in the United States. And we have polarization. There's no doubt about it. And we all have to try to, you know, to try to continue to maintain a community in spite of the divisions. And I accept the caller's point that Cardinal Ratzinger, as a writer at that time, tended to make statements that were fairly offensive to some people, even though he didn't mean them to be offensive. If you say that if you're not a Catholic, but you're not a Christian, you have another religion as the basis of your faith, that your faith is seriously defective.
Did he use that word, defective?
Yes, he did. He used the word seriously defective. It's going to cause a great reaction, even though you don't mean it to cause that reaction and a hostility. And then later he would explain what it means and give a theological explanation for it. The same kind of thing happened with liberation theology in the 80s. He made one statement in the first document on liberation theology that was really a broadside and treated all movements as the same and atheistic and Marxist. Then later he cleaned it up and explained what he meant. It was a better document.
Mm.
So in this country, I would think I hope he doesn't start off writing very much and goes through a period, as I said, of listening, of understanding what the lay of the land is, and understanding how his words now as Pope are going to carry much more weight than they ever did as the director of the Doctrine for the Congregation of the Faith. Congregation for the Faith is one branch of the Vatican, and people grade their documents on a different level than encyclicals.
Scott Hahn, if I can turn that question over to you, the caller's point that as a gay man, he feels that the new pope is going to take an even harder line on his lifestyle and that it is going to contribute to more divisiveness in the church.
Well, I would certainly hope that it wouldn't, and I don't expect that it will. I would say that Cardinal Ratzinger's teachings are probably going to mirror John Paul's teachings on this issue precisely, exactly. And so I don't think there's anything more to be said that will be harsher. I certainly don't expect anything to be coming down from Ratzinger that would or from Benedict XVI that would differ from John Paul II. I think it's just important for us as American Catholics, who are sometimes more American than we are Catholic, to recognize that the faith is not something that the new pope has the prerogative to redefine. For us, we can garner, you know, we can marshal a majority and change our laws and change our structures as a democracy that is very different than this worldwide family we call the church. For us, democracy is reality, and there are certainly important democratic elements in the church, but above all, it really is a universal family. And so what we're looking at is in some ways foreign to our own American experience, but at the same time, I think it really gives a lot of light and truth and help for us, because it is the way in which the gospel reaches us.
Stephen Pope, you have a response.
Well, just to follow up a little bit on that, I think that one of the unfortunate effects of having such a powerful pope that has just deceased is there really has emerged a cult of the papacy. And Catholicism in the minds of many people is identical with the papacy, with the pope. And I think we need to keep in mind with knowledge of history that Catholicism is a long and broad and very diverse tradition, over a billion people, and that people are going to find Christ in their own communities and in their own lives and have to do so with the integrity that they can muster. And they don't need to focus so much of their Catholicism over and against the criteria that's set by the pope. His teaching is certainly important, but it's not the only element of Catholicism, and it's important to see the tradition as much broader than one individual.
That also sounds like something, though, that Pope Benedict XVI would violently disagree with.
I don't know about violently. John Paul II was very much in favor of nonviolence.
I used the wrong word, strongly. Strongly.
I think
disagree?
He would accept what
okay.
I just said, that it's a broad tradition and a deep tradition, and that that Catholicism is more than the individual personality of the pope.
Okay. Yeah, I would say that what Stephen has articulated is an important and essential part of what it means to be Catholic for Benedict XVI as well as for Stephen or for me. It's not something that really would be a disagreeable proposition. I think it's something at the heart of what it means to be Catholic. We have bishops, we have priests, we are a community of faith that is not only international but local.
Well, and we're going to have to stop it there. I thank you all for a most interesting discussion this evening. Scott Hahn joining us from Steubenville, Ohio, professor of theology and scripture at Franciscan University of Steubenville. Stephen Pope in the studio with me, associate professor of theology, Boston College, and Margaret O'Brien Steinfels, who had to leave us a little early. She was joining us from New York, co-director of the Fordham Center. I'm Jennifer Westaway, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio. Support for On Point comes from